Hello, you're listening to State Scoop's Priorities Podcast. I'm Colin Wood, Managing Editor of State Scoop, and I'm here with Benjamin Fried, State Scoop's Tech Editor. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Colin. How's it going?
Very well. So we are putting together a list of stories from the last year that, in retrospect, speaking now in early December, seem to have mattered the most for state and local government IT, and we're going to talk about some of them, not all of them, but a longer list in text form will be published to State Scoop's website. And in the meantime, I think the place to start is with just IT generally and how that evolved during the course of the pandemic. Everyone seemed really overwhelmed last year, but this year it seemed that many gained some benefit from having a baseline of operations under control, just having all of the VPNs and remote work policies, for example, in place seemed to go a long way for a lot of organizations, though that's not to say that everything was smooth sailing the last 12 months. What's your read on that situation?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. It was definitely, in ways, 2021 was smoother than 2020. If 2020 was the year where every CIO in the country had to scramble to figure out how to make remote work a possibility for their entire enterprises, and scrambling to buy enough devices and licenses to make sure everybody could stay connected, then 2021, I think, was the year of, what worked well, seems to have worked well for a lot of CIOs this year, is that this year has been full of a lot of realizations that remote work, if not, full time, then at least, making it more of an option, being a little more liberal with telework. I think, we're starting to really see those policies set into place. But that's not to say there weren't still big challenges. Certainly the first part of the year, we saw in a lot of states some troubled rollouts of vaccine appointment booking systems. Notably, at the start of the year, right after the vaccines had been approved, we saw places like Florida where there was no kind of centralized system for making an appointment, and a lot of counties across that state were basically making appointments for vaccines on Eventbrite, which caused a lot of difficulties. I think, particularly in a population with a lot of seniors, but also, from a privacy standpoint, I know there were a lot of concerns about that at the time. The vaccine rollout, I think it was also hampered because at the federal level, the CDC had developed a system that turned out to be pretty flawed and was quickly abandoned by pretty much every state. But certainly, we reported extensively on the problems that Washington, D.C. had, where there were successive days in March where the city's vaccine management website just crashed under the really heavy demand, because when those vaccines were announced, people wanted to get them because they are our way out of the pandemic. The vaccines issues seem to have been resolved. We've gotten people vaccinated in waves in this country. Obviously there's still a long way to go now, especially with booster campaigns. But the vaccine issues seem to have mostly been sorted out. I think, though, in terms of pandemic IT, maybe one of the biggest legacies is going to be the explosion in popularity of what's known as low-code and no-code software. These are kind of the latest agile development tools that CIOs have really embraced. They don't take much programming skill, as one might suspect from the terms low code and no code. It's more about kind of a visual building, it's application development with visual building blocks. A lot of states use them in designing their vaccine sites, and a lot of other functions and a lot of other services during the pandemic. And it's something that NASIO has talked more about over the past year. And I think it's something that we're going to hear CIOs continue to talk about in 2022.
Right. That would make sense. And with all of the relief funding and the infrastructure funding, it sounds like, funding problems aren't solved forever, but for the time being, it sounds like a lot of places have the money to do those kinds of things if they want to. Yeah. So, all right, moving on, Tyler Technologies. That was another big story we identified over the past year. Tyler was already a pretty big company and they became bigger. They bought a bunch of other companies. One thing that we haven't covered extensively, despite having covered quite a few of these acquisitions, is exactly what this means for our space. So do you have any thoughts on that? What does it mean that Tyler is growing bigger for states in the state and local government agency arena?
Well, Tyler had been like, which, like, as you said, was already pretty big, had been buying up a lot of smaller companies, really since 2015, 2014. And most of their acquisitions were, small, very niche software companies that had some foothold in the civic tech space. And in February, Tyler bought NIC. I think that deal was north of $2 billion. And that gave Tyler NIC is one of the biggest developers of payment systems, electronic payment systems, and that really expands Tyler. That's really, I think, going to expand Tyler's presence in the government market, not just at the state and local levels, but also it's going to give them a bigger federal presence, which I think is something that the company has been seeking for a long time. I think the fruits of that merger are starting to come out. I believe there was one of their first big contracts as a result of that merger happened back in September. They got a pretty big contract with in Colorado that is going to put NIC's payment platform and some of Tyler's other properties in place across one of the state's biggest departments. I think regulatory department there. Tyler's also, since the NIC deal, has continued to buy up other smaller companies. I think they've also bought up companies that do claims processing, software that's used by incarcerated people, police data software. Tyler's just continuing to grow and grow and grow. And I think what it says is that, like a lot of other industries, the government IT, the state and local IT space, is really active right now. So we're seeing a lot of mergers, but also a lot of new companies that are trying to go public or trying to really ramp up their valuations. It's been a pretty active market. I'm certainly no financial analyst, but it does seem like the government IT space is as active as any other industry.
Right. And speaking of finance, one of your favorite topics, Citicoins. So for anyone who hasn't followed this coverage, Citicoins is a company that develops cryptocurrencies that are dedicated to a particular city. Miami and New York being the first two that they created, and the city doesn't necessarily need to sign off on it. And in the case of Miami and New York, for legal reasons, it seems that they haven't officially sanctioned these things, but they do have dedicated wallets that have reached, I forget the exact amount, it's tens of millions of dollars in those coins, and they can use it however they want. And the way that that currency is generated is that whenever that those coins are mined, a percentage of it goes straight to the city government. That's how it's supposed to work. And Austin, Texas is possibly, as we're recording, possibly the next city to do that. My take on this is that whatever you think about cryptocurrency or whatever you think about city coins, it seems like this company has found a way to create something that gives free money to city governments. So I don't know why anyone would pass it up. If someone shows up and says, hey, we're going to give you millions of dollars, it seems like most people would just say, you know, great, even if they are Luddites, like certain reporters that I know. But what's your take on, not necessarily your take, but what do you think the consequence of all this will be?
By Luddites, I assume you mean you're talking about Ben McKenzie, who, you know, from the OC, who is now reporting on the cryptocurrency industry.
That's right.
So the city coins thing, I think it's definitely a product of the cryptocurrency hype machine that just seems to be unquenchable. Really aggressive. Who knows if it's unquenchable? Certainly in the case of Miami, you have a mayor, Francis Suarez, who is really enthusiastic about cryptocurrency, Bitcoin in particular. He has actively courted Bitcoin miners to move to Miami. With all of the climate. Potential energy consumption implications that could have. Miami, I think, is also, has hosted a major Bitcoin industry conference. Suarez and his CIO, Mike Cerasti, have also recently even started converting most, if not all, of their public salaries into.
I think it's something like 10%.
10%. Yeah. Well, they could go. I thought it was. They may have done like 100% on one of them.
Well, they're in any case, they're toying with it. Yep.
Yeah, they're toying it, there's a bit of a story that they tell. They say, "Oh, we're getting paid in Bitcoin." They're not actually getting paid in Bitcoin. They're getting paid in dollars, and then there's an app that allows them to dump their actual U.S. dollar paycheck into a cryptocurrency wallet. What's interesting about at least at the cryptocurrency enthusiasm among mayors is that Eric Adams, who's the incoming mayor of New York City, has been making a lot of noises similar to Mayor Suarez. He said he wants to make New York City the cryptocurrency capital of the world. He said he also wants to convert some of his initial paychecks as mayor into Bitcoin. I don't know how far along the New York City coin project has done, but getting back to city coins, that company which reporter Ryan Johnston has been covering a lot lately, they have made overtures to Austin. There's some active courting of the Philadelphia CIO on Twitter. It's kind of cute to watch in real time. What remains to be seen is, you know, certainly in the case of Austin and Philadelphia, how interested mayors, city council members, the people who actually call the shots on policy and budgets, how interested they are, as well as how viable of a revenue source this is long term. Whether this is kind of a flash in the pan thing, or is this actually going to be some kind of charitable model for cities.
Well, another thing that's interesting that Ryan and I talked about recently was it's one thing to do this for Miami or New York, but once they get through all of the more bleeding edge tech hubs of the US and you get to places that are perhaps less ready for something like this, how are they going to handle it, if at all? Because with any new technology in a city or state government, no matter how kind of plug and play it seems, there's always a bunch of work to do. Even if it's not technical work, there's always some kind of policy or law change that needs to go into place. And so I think one thing we can say for sure is there's still a lot of thinking left to be done on this space if sure. This is something that does in fact stick around.
And after the big tech hubs, who even knows if the city coin, the people behind the city coins projects will want to do an Albany coin.
Right.
This is the part where I'll disclose to the listeners that I grew up in Albany. So when I make fun of it,
you're allowed.
It's out of love.
Right. All right. Well, from something you have questionable, perhaps something you don't like to something you do like, cybersecurity. So the story this year with cybersecurity is that it's cyber threats is that they're still here. So we're not going to spend a ton of time on this, but what is there to say about cybersecurity in 2021 that hasn't already been said 1,000 times before?
Well, I mean, that's exactly it. They're here. They are, the threats are here. The threats are as active as ever, especially in K-12 schools, local governments, of course. Obviously, we've had several major stories about ransomware and supply chain attacks that have made national news, that don't necessarily affect government directly, but certainly after incidents like SolarWinds and the Colonial Pipeline ransomware and the attack on the Kaseya software company that really upended operations of a lot of critical sectors. I think there's probably more public awareness of cyber threats than any time in recent memory. I think what's different this year is that there's actually been there's been stepped up federal activity that has trickled down to the state and local levels. We've heard from a few states that are trying to think about how to adapt some of the language in the executive order that President Biden signed back in May to their enterprises. But really the biggest thing for states is that there is going to be a cybersecurity grant program through the bipartisan infrastructure legislation that was enacted recently. It's small. It's only $1 billion over 4 years, and that's out of a $1.2 trillion bill. But it sets up a program that CIOs have been clamoring for several years now. And I think one of the biggest cybersecurity stories we're going to have going into 2022 is how these grants will actually be applied for, what the money will go toward, whether it will actually make an impact. Most of the money actually does have to go down to the local level. And I don't think this is the last we've heard about the grant program as a legislative agenda item, that I think there's still a desire. I think there's definitely a desire among certain members of Congress, but I think probably also, CIOs would like this, for this grant program to go beyond just a short-term infrastructure spending plan and, maybe become a bit more robust and permanent. That's, a whole other, that's a whole other bag to deal with. But I think, we're going to really, I think we are going to see how these grants put to work. We'll see how much of an impact they actually have.
Right, right. Well, one thing I've noticed as someone who's following this less closely than you is that despite the fact that the threats are increasing, it does really seem like the amount of effort, at least, to an organization in terms of creating new groups and different arms that coordinate efforts across different jurisdictions and between different levels of government, that the amount of work, just the volume of it, seems to have increased quite a lot. So
it really, it has. I mean, we've got new groups like there's a new coalition of city chief information security officers, city IT officials are, there are some organizations that are okay convening them, but there hadn't really been a any kind of major effort to convene city cybersecurity officials until recently. Certainly, there are we're still seeing more and more states step up their use of National Guard units or civilian cybersecurity volunteers. The whole of state approach that really has been talked about a lot over the past two or three years is still growing. That's still a really big topic for not only CIOs but also Homeland Security officials and governor all the way up to governors.
Right. All right. Well, I think we can leave it there. We could keep going, but people can check out the longer extended list in text form on State Scoop's website. And thanks, Ben. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
All right. That's it for this episode. For more coverage of state and local government IT news, go to statescoop.com.